Ghostbusters.
Okay. Cool. See ya. Hello and welcome to episode 123 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hi.
Hey, everybody.
All right, so the time has come. We are doing a full 20-minute review on the new Ghostbusters movie. Angie, get us started.
All right, here is the IMDb synopsis. 30 years after Ghostbusters took the world by storm, the beloved franchise makes its long-awaited return. Director Paul Feig brings his fresh take to the supernatural comedy, joined by some of the funniest actors working today. That is not inaccurate, but I mean, yeah, you don't need the IMDb synopsis to tell you what the concept of Ghostbusters is. It's about people busting ghosts. So the one thing that I would say is that I feel like the IMDb synopsis makes it sound kind of like it's a sequel that takes place 30 minutes later, and it is a hard reboot that has no connection narratively to the original. Ghostbusters is a movie that I feel like is almost kind of hard to talk about just because there's been so much fuss over it that has nothing to do with the movie itself, which no one even saw until recently. So it's tough to even know where to begin, but I will say this. I think that, I feel like Paul Feig and his cast really try hard to kind of make this franchise their own. It doesn't feel like a retread. It doesn't feel like they're coasting on nostalgia. It doesn't feel like they're taking for granted that people just like the Ghostbusters. Like, it feels like they really are building this world and the characters from the ground up and doing the legwork to make you care about them again. And I feel like they actually pull it off pretty well. Like, granted, there are a lot of references to the original, and of course the concept is based on the original concept, but overall it really just does feel like its own thing. I think it stands on its own really well.
I would have to agree with you. I don't think it's coasting on success of the original, but I think it's digging a little too hard to make connections to the original, especially some of the cameos. I mean, some of them worked better than others, but I don't know if I would have forced all those into the movie. But overall, I found the four of them so Chris Hemsworth, so incredibly likable. I was just happy and having fun. And if I wasn't picking apart certain details, you know, that might not have made sense, or certain things that were a little too silly for my typical taste in this kind of movie, I was surprisingly happy from start to finish, except when the Fall Out Boy song kicked in.
Oh, God, yeah, Fall Out Boy song is the worst thing to ever happen to cinema. But other than that,
wow.
No, that's true. It is pretty atrocious.
Yeah.
I agree. I like the movie a lot. I thought it was really funny. And I have to say that after all of this back and forth about what it was going to be, I was a little anxious to watch it, because at this point it was just like, I was worried I wouldn't be able to just watch a movie, that like I'd have to be thinking about all these conversations that have led up to it. But I actually, like, within like 5 minutes, I wasn't thinking about any of that, and I was just enjoying the story and having fun with these characters. And I thought that they did a really good job of setting up a rebooted world that's fun. And it's like, you know, I'd like to see more of this. I'd like to see more than playing in the sandbox. But I agree that I feel what holds this movie back, a lot like we talked about with Independence Day Resurgence, was that this attempt at like fan service to the original film, like, I get that you want a little bit of that, but it's so ham-fisted in this. And every time one of the original people from the original movie pops in, the movie stops. Like, it screeches to a halt. There is no point to them story-wise. And it's like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, look who it is! And it's just like, I don't fucking care. Like, I like these people. And I'll admit that there was one in particular that made me go like, woo!
Sorry, I thought you were done. Go ahead.
Sure. But, like, by and large, like, there's so many cameos like that and so many moments where they're like, and here's Slimer, and here's this iconography, and here's this line, that I felt like the movie would have been a lot sharper and funnier if they had just not been so beholden to tipping their hat to the 84 one. Like, I like this a lot, but it has enough of its own good stuff that it didn't need all of that pandering.
I didn't find the references to be as intrusive as I'm finding out that a lot of other people have. But the thing that I more thought was holding the movie back is, like, I think that Ghostbusters is at its strongest in the first act, and not coincidentally, that's also when it feels most like just like a regular Paul Feig comedy, like Bridesmaids or Spy or The Heat. Because the first act is where you get a lot of like character work, where you get to like meet the characters and see the way that they bounce off of each other and the way they interact, and it's really fun. And then I feel like and then as the movie goes on, it goes more and more toward, you know, the summer blockbuster thing. And it really, and like, especially like the climax, I don't want to give away any spoilers, but there's a climax that's really, really long and really like CG and fighting and ghosts and whatnot. And it does feel like to me, I think more than the references, I wished that this movie had been allowed to stray from the blockbuster formula a little bit more. Like, I feel like I wish that it had not felt obligated to put in so much action that I feel like, I feel like this movie's strengths are its comedy and its characters, and I wish they had been able to emphasize that more and not be as concerned about, like, the action-y stuff.
I'm actually going to disagree. I found it to be pretty even from start to finish, just in terms of the balance of not necessarily action, but highlighting, you know, weapons and the ghost fighting, and then also that classic Paul Feig comedy that we've kind of come to know and love at this point. And it was a very quick moving, like, anytime something fell flat, it was kind of no big deal, because something, it's very similar to what we were talking about last week with Secret Life of Pets, where if you didn't really like something, it moves right on to the next thing before you know it. So I was totally fine with that. And just to go back to what I just said before, my favorite thing from start to finish in this movie was the dynamic between the four of them, and especially
plus Chris Hemsworth.
Plus, now I just lost my train of thought, but I have another thing that was, it's okay, because I have something else I want to say that is kind of important. One thing that I found very, very disappointing from the marketing campaign, which we all well know, that marketing campaign sucked. It didn't sell the movie well. It also spoiled a lot, and I always think that that's going to happen, and then I get into a movie and I'm like, oh, no big deal. Like, it really didn't spoil everything. No, this campaign, if you've kept up with every single piece of promotional material that they release, spoils almost everything except maybe the third act climax and some of the cameos. But really, all the big scenes. Like, when I was writing up the 5 clips they released the other day, and they released one of my favorite scenes in the movie, which is when they were interviewing Chris Hemsworth's character for the receptionist position. That scene is online. Don't put that online. You leave that for the movie. That's one of the best scenes ever.
It's really good in the movie. Christy's making faces. I think that's a good point. I agree.
But also, just to touch on what you were saying about the third act climax, one, yes, it's typical blockbuster style. It's almost, you know, you're obligated to include a big third act fight scene, especially with a movie called Ghostbusters. But I thought they did a really great job with it. I'll tell you, I was not a fan of how they portrayed New York in this movie, because it's like bullshit New York. It's cinema New York.
It's Boston. But you were just, but you like the New York, but you don't like the Ghostbusters
I did.
New York.
Well, because that had like style and flavor, and it still had like a New York feel to me, where it was.
I actually thought this had a New York feel, but I'm apparently in the minority on that one.
Well, my problem with how New York looked, I feel like I've started like a billion thoughts in this little rant and then veered off into something else. But it did. One, I knew it was shot in Boston, and it looked like it was shot in Boston.
Yep.
And another major problem I had was it almost had like a play-like feel, where it was a painted set extension in the background. Some of it just looked, it looked fake and awful.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? When you got stuff, like real stuff on the stage, and then all the background is kind of painted in a stage play. You know what I'm
saying? I know what you mean. I just didn't feel like that.
Oh, well, I saw that quite. I mean, I don't know if that's actually how they did it. They probably didn't. But that's the feeling I got from a lot of the visuals in this movie, especially towards the end. But to give a little some good insight about the ending is I liked the design of the ghost. I liked the fighting style. I liked seeing all of them kind of rise to the occasion. And it was exciting enough for me.
I wanted to loop into Chris Hemsworth, and then we can talk about the other thing I know we all want to talk about. But Hemsworth is amazing in this.
I have been, okay, so ever since the first Thor came out, I was like, is it just me or is this guy way better at the comedy parts of Thor than the dramatic parts of Thor? Which is like, Thor's not a comedy. But ever since then, I've been convinced that Chris Hemsworth's real calling in life is to be a comedic actor. And I feel like, Ghostbusters, look at this. Look how good he is in this. Look how delightful he is. He is one of the best things about the movie. He steals so many scenes. And he's surrounded by a cast of comedy vets. It's like really impressive that he not only holds his own against them, but rises above them in a lot of situations.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's like a, I mean, like we said, there's, we've talked a little bit before, I think, about when they released the Kevin supercut to get people excited about his character. And then we talked about the scene that they released. And I'm not saying go watch all this because you should just see it in context. But like, Chris Hemsworth takes a role that could be too much because it's basically, he's such a dummy that it could just be too stupid. But Chris Hemsworth plays this dummy so beautifully that, like, there's one part where they have a long conversation and he abruptly stops it, puts on, like, a fedora, and then says he has to go finish playing hide and seek. And, like, there are not a lot of people that could make that transition so smoothly. And I was just, he's so funny. Like, there's a whole sequence involving headshots that is just one of my favorite things I've seen all year.
The one that got me is when he holds up the picture of the house and the hot dog, and he's like, oh, it's kind of imply that a ghost is holding the hot dog. That was one of those moments where I laughed out loud, and then I kept laughing like 10 minutes after the joke was finished.
That was neat. I don't even want to spoil the joke that made me do it, but I feel like if you've seen it, you'll probably be able to guess what it is. But I mean, like, honestly, he had so many jokes that, like, a lot of the jokes that I'm still laughing at, like, days after I saw it are the ones that Chris Hemsworth gets. Like, he gets some of the best material, and he delivers it so well. I think he's like Rose Byrne. He just needs to accept that he's really a comedic actor.
Oh my god, the two of them should do a movie together.
Fuck,
oh my
yeah! God. And they're both Australian, they're both good looking as fuck.
It'd
and
be
they
so
are
hot
hilarious.
And so funny.
Yes, yes.
I'm on board for this. Let's make this happen.
He's the male Rose Byrne, you guys. Get on board.
Let's talk a little bit about our four leads here. My favorite by far was definitely Kate McKinnon.
I think
Kate McKinnon steals this movie.
I honestly think that this is going to be like a Melissa McCarthy and Bridesmaids type role for her, where it could really launch her to really great, bigger things.
Absolutely.
Kate McKinnon was my favorite, but I'll tell you, Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy paled in comparison to Kate McKinnon and Leslie Jones. The two of them, every single time they were on screen, they kind of just, like, commanded your attention 10 times more than the other two could. And maybe it's because the other two, I guess they just had less personality to me, the characters. They kind of present what they present what
they
are at the very beginning.
Burdened with that.
Well, but they present who these two people are. Their characters are Aaron and Abby. They present who they are, what their situation was, what their past was, why they don't get along now, very early on in the movie. And, you know, their relationship does change as they become the Ghostbusters, but it really doesn't change all that much. It pretty much is what it was at the very beginning, with one slight little change that you could have seen coming the moment they introduced their little predicament.
Yeah. I think that the foursome is very good, but I feel like because Melissa and Kristen were tasked with so much of the storytelling and the emotional arc, they didn't get to be as funny as I think we expect from them. But I thought Leslie Jones was really funny and brought like a sharp kind of wit to it. But then Kate McKinnon. It's like they literally introduced her with a pickup line where she's just hitting on Kristen Wiig
movie. You hear her before you even see her, and her line is like, come here often. And like, I was immediately like, I was like, whoa, I think my Kinsey scale just broke. Like, what's happening?
It's just, she's so, it's funny. I've been comparing her to like Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park. It's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's like she's funny but kind of like sexual but kind of weird, and like I was just so into it. It's funny and charismatic, and I've heard some people complain that they feel like her character Holtzman feels like she's from a totally different movie, and I don't agree with that, because I just think that she's like, every group has a weirdo, and I'm fine with her being the weirdo. I think it's really the people who expected these characters to be a more direct translation of the original characters that are like, how does this fit into those guys? And she doesn't. Like, she's an engineer, but she's her own creation. I think more so even than the other three, she's very like elaborately her own thing. But it's just, we talked a lot about the Chris Hemsworth lines. Like, I don't remember the lines that Kate McKinnon gave, and it's not necessarily, it's like more because it's her delivery that was so funny and not necessarily the lines. And there's like one part where she's dancing around. Every time she was on screen, I was totally thrilled.
It's also
Leslie Jones
face.
Had a lot of that too. It was the stuff in the that they revealed in the trailer in the during the concert, where I thought, having seen it, and a lot of the stuff. So yes, I still think it's bad that they revealed a whole bunch of stuff in the marketing campaign that should have been saved for the movie. But I will say, a lot of the stuff that we've seen in trailers and clips that don't play well out of context work much better in the full feature. And a lot of that's, like, I mean, even the stupid selfie thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I while watching that in the context of that whole sequence, I kind of didn't mind it. And it's hard to talk about it because there's so many things that are out there in the marketing campaign right now that I don't want to spoil. But
yeah, but well, Patty has this whole little people are getting all uppity about with the slaps when Leslie Jones slaps Melissa McCarthy. I think that plays way better in context than it does in the trailer.
That was
are we
actually
gonna talk about
good...
the villain at all? I guess we should, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys want to go into spoilers?
Yeah.
Well, maybe let's briefly touch on the villain before we go full-blown spoilers.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to be quiet because everything I have to say about the villain is very spoilery. Go ahead.
Oh. All right, well, I guess the villain was probably one of the most underwhelming parts to me. I think it needed a little more to have meaning beyond the fact that, oh, Ghostbusters fighting ghosts. Like, there's a reason all of it was happening, and I didn't really give a shit about the reason.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, now I'm anticipating the exact opposite reaction from
Let's
you.
Let's just go into spoilers, wait, guys.
Wait, just one more question briefly before we go into spoilers and cut everyone else off that has not seen the movie yet. Are you two hardcore Ghostbusters fans?
No.
I mean, I always thought I liked those movies, and then when the reaction to this reboot was a lot of people being losing their minds, I don't know anymore. Like, I thought I liked them, but I was like, even though I wasn't excited about the idea of a Ghostbusters 3, because honestly, I didn't want to see the Ghostbusters suiting up years later, that's really, really depressing looking to me. I wasn't so beholden to the originals that I was offended by the concept of a reboot. But yeah, I watched them a lot. I honestly watched Ghostbusters 2 a whole lot more. I don't know why, but I did. And yeah, I consider myself a fan of the originals, but I don't know that I'd go diehard because I feel like the diehard fans are the ones spouting about ruined childhoods and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I like the original and I will watch it every once in a while, but it most certainly isn't something like Independence Day, for example, where I grew up watching it over and over and over. I'm obsessed with the characters, obsessed with the mythology. So, you know, even though I would like to think most people should give movies the benefit of the doubt, regardless of whether or not it's original or rebooting something you love, at the same time, I also respect people who might be upset that something that is so precious to them is being changed. It's just...
Here's the thing. I don't respect that. And not just, like, I of course don't respect the people that are like, women aren't funny and da-da-da-da and are saying all the misogynistic stuff. But even the people that are just so angry this movie exists and not on sexist terms, I don't get it. I don't get it. There are movies that they remake all the time, and especially from the 80s and from our childhood, they did, like, they brought back G.I. Joe, they brought back Gem. Gem did get screamed at by people. They brought back Transformers. There's all these movies that came back, and it was not met with this kind of vitriol, and I just don't get that.
I don't get expressing your opinion in the way that certain people who are upset that this movie exists have expressed themselves over the past couple of months. But if you keep it to yourself and it's just like I understand the natural feeling of being very precious about something that you love
sure.
so much.
But there's like a difference between being like, oh, I don't want to watch that, and feeling the need of making a hobby out of telling everyone on the internet that you don't want to watch that. Like, I don't know that I am the fan of anything enough to do that. I don't understand that kind of fandom. And, like, I watched Ghostbusters countless times growing up. I watched the Ghostbusters cartoon show. I had the toys. I had t-shirts. Like, all that stuff. But, like, when I heard they were remaking it, I at no point was, like, you know, rending my clothes and gnashing my teeth and screaming to the heavens. I just don't get that.
I don't know if I was doing that, but I'll definitely admit that when the MTV Scream TV series was coming together, I wrote a couple of articles that were very, very negative, especially when they released the mask, where I kind of almost took it personally that mask looked so stupid and wasn't Ghostface.
I mean, sure. This is kind of the tricky thing that, like, you know, we've seen it's really, really popular right now to reboot old properties, and this is kind of the tricky line you walk. Like, on the one hand, you get automatic attention because, you know, you're rebooting something that people have already heard of and already like, but on the other hand, you come under a lot of scrutiny, and Ghostbusters, for various, very obvious reasons, has come under even more scrutiny. We talked, like, I mentioned at the top of this review that I think Ghostbusters is a movie that's really hard to review because of all the, to review, like, with a clear head right now because of all the fuss surrounding it. And I feel like, you know, aside from just like the sexism of it, so much of the reaction that I've seen to Ghostbusters has to do with so many people who have really strong ideas about what this movie should have been and what it was supposed to be and what they need it to be. And I do feel like, in a, I almost feel like this movie is going to be easier to review in 3 years when like kind of the buzz has died down and people have calmed down about what they thought it was going to be versus what it turned out to be and are able to see it for what it is. I'm not saying we're going to be like, oh, we look back and we all realize it's a misunderstood masterpiece, but I'm just saying, like, I feel like it is, what that's one of the reasons it's really hard to talk about this movie is because everyone seems to have this idea.
Yeah, you can't separate the movie from the conversation in this moment.
You can't separate it from the conversation, and I feel like it's, you know, the comparisons to the original are, it's not trying to be the original, but you can't help but, you know, compare it in your head, and I feel like it's really harming this movie's, This movie's trying to stand on its own, but it's hard to do when everyone is only looking at this movie and thinking, like, well, the original was like this. Well, the humor is different. Well, the characters are different. The action
and
is
I
different.
Do think that it hurts this movie that it tries to put a foot in both camps by saying we're doing our own thing, but then being so beholden to the fan service and to the cameos and stuff that it's, like, constantly reminding us about the movie that it's trying not to be. And I'm just, like, I just wish that they, if they were going to do fan service, that it had been more smoothly integrated, because it's just not.
I get the sense that they were probably pressured into it throughout the process, too, because watching the movie, I do feel like there's certain scenes that were cut short, and there's a lot of material that went unused, and I think you could pretty much sense that from the end credits as well.
Yeah.
I just feel like they shot a lot more, and maybe they might have gotten scared to do one thing versus the other, because another serviced the original movie a little more.
It's really strange because there are enough roles in this movie that they could have taken members of the original cast and integrated them into the plot. Like, they could have made them, there's like a dean at the college, there's a guy in the beginning who's like, my estate is haunted. Like, those could have been played by the cast members and it would have made sense within the context of the film, but it's like, it was like they didn't want to do that, and so instead it's just like the whole thing screeches to a stop and it's like, hey Dan Aykroyd, what are you doing? And it's like, well, being really schmackty, how are you doing? Like, you know. Aykroyd's the worst.
All right, do we want to briefly touch on some spoilers before we got to wrap this up?
Let's do that.
No? All right, so spoiler alert for the new Ghostbusters movie. If you haven't seen it, now is the time to tune out or fast forward to the ending. We're going to talk about big spoilers now, so you have been warned. All right, Christy, you want to go first?
So yeah, a couple of months ago on Pajiba, when they released, like, I think it was the second trailer, there was a shot where Kevin is yelling at the Ghostbusters that he was born to be a Ghostbuster, and then you see a ghost take over his body. And I said, okay, so MRAs are the bad guy in Ghostbusters. And I was like, sort of kidding? I don't think the bad guy is meant to be a flat-out MRA, but I do think that it's interesting that the film is ultimately about the idea of this guy feeling so persecuted and so bullied that instead of trying to turn like into something positive, he decides he's going to destroy everything. And it becomes so meta because it's like, you know, it was funny because someone was asking me, like, when you ask me if I'm a fan of Ghostbusters, it's like, well, I thought I was, but now it's like, you know, these MRA guys are ruining my childhood. Wah. Like, it's by being so hateful and so spiteful, he is destroying everything around him, and so it becomes this whole meta commentary, and I thought that was kind of neat. I don't think the movie hits it over the head, and he is a misanthropic character, not specifically a misogynistic character. He hates everybody. But then by contrast, that turns the girls who are being persecuted, not so much because they're women, but well, a little bit. They get into that a little bit. But mostly it's because people think they're crackpots, that they're like, ghosts aren't real, whatever, and Abby says something like, we get busted on all the time. And, you know, it doesn't make them bad people. So it's kind of like, I'm going to throw back to Paranorman, where ultimately that movie was about how do you handle bullying? Do you become, like, do you let it make you stronger, or do you let it make you something terrible too? And I really liked that as a concept.
Perry, you were the one that wanted to talk about the villain earlier. Does anything Chrissy said change your mind?
No, I didn't read into it that much.
I feel like that's almost a good thing, because I really feel like the movie is surprisingly, like, I thought the movie surprisingly, like, it has a pretty light touch with the whole, like, you know, feminism and are women persecuted. Like, it actually doesn't rely that much on, like, it's not really a movie about sexism or, like, how tough it is to be a woman. It's not a movie about, like, misogynists or anything. It really, so I was pleasantly surprised that the movie just is what it is. But I think that, I mean, I feel like because of the context surrounding Ghostbusters, it's very easy to interpret that the villain as like, oh, he's like a Ghostbusters hater. But a guy that's been dealt a tough hand in life and is bitter about the world and wants to destroy it is not exactly like Ghostbusters didn't invent the idea of that kind of villain.
Totally.
I kind of wish that his reign had not necessarily ended, because that wouldn't have been possible, but I wish that the whole transference into Chris Hemsworth would have happened a little earlier, because as it stands, I didn't care so much about his mission.
The character of Rowan?
Yeah, Rowan. Yeah. He was kind of just randomly there. It's a very surface level to me, you know, way to portray, you know.
He's a comedian who's done a lot of, like, feminist comedy. I don't think that was the intention. I think they cast him because he's funny. But he's actually in the M'Lady sketch from Inside Amy Schumer. And I think that, honestly, I do think that my reading of this is very influenced by the time that this is coming out and the conversation already around it. I think at its core, it was written to be about bullying and about, you know, people, whether you take that in, like, how you take that on. But I think that you can read it this way.
I feel like we've seen a lot of movies where villains want to destroy the world. And compared to the other movies we've seen recently where villains want to destroy the world, this one had a more clearly defined motive than many of them, so I'll give them that. But we should wrap up. Like, so overall, Ghostbusters, yay, nay?
Yeah, totally. It's really fun.
I say...
Yeah.
I really liked it. I will say, please don't go in expecting it to be just like the original. If you have very strongly held beliefs about, like, this needs to be like the original, you're going to be disappointed, because it doesn't really... There are a lot of references and callbacks, as you guys pointed out, but it doesn't really try to be that. But overall, like, if you're willing to go in and just see what this new Ghostbusters is, I think it's funny. I think it's really entertaining. I really love the new cast members. Kate McKinnon should be a big, big star, and Chris Hemsworth needs to just accept that he is a comedian.
Yeah. I'll still be waiting for my Chris Hemsworth Rose Byrne movie, but... I would recommend seeing this. I'm a little hesitant to flat out say that, because I don't want anyone who is so attached to the original to walk in and be completely offended and heartbroken and everything else negative. But if you go in with an open mind, this is not a bad movie by any means. It's not a great movie either. There are a lot of, you know, bumps in the road and things that I would have liked to have seen done differently. But overall, it's a fun, what is it, like, just a little over an hour and a half of
a little,
you know,
under
whole
two.
Bunch of little under two of like a bunch of really funny ladies kicking some ghost ass, and I had a delightful time watching this movie.
Yeah.
So I think that's the general consensus there. We all seem pretty positive about it, which, hey, that's a nice surprise after everything, right?
And it's a nice surprise after our fucking Independence Day resurgence and Purge reviews, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, thankfully I had a couple weeks to recover after those two movies. All right, so that is a wrap on episode 123 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You guys know where to find us. We are on iTunes, where you can rate, comment, and subscribe to the podcast. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. Please like us on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Popcorn Prosecco. And then all three of us are on the internet as well. Christy, do you want to take it first?
You can find me on Twitter, at Christy Puchko. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. And I read all over the internet, but you can find me at decadentcriminals.com for career highlights.
I was 2 seconds away from jumping in and giving you a little nudge, because I know
me
the whole
too.
Outro at this point. Angie, you're up.
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
You can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff, on Collider.com, the Collider Videos YouTube channel. That's it for episode 123. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.